session number 11063, reel 1.
Mr. Burton, reel 1. Whereabouts were you born, please?
Bradford, West Yorkshire.
And what did your father do for a living?
My father worked in the engineering. My mother was a weaver.
Where did you go to school? In Bradford?
Yes.
And how old were you when you left?
14.
Where did you go to work?
I went to work in a mill, pushing a weft cart round the weaving.
How old were you when war broke out?
17. 1939 I was. It broke out. I was born in 1922. 17.
And had you been following what was happening in the way of...
history? Yes, I was very interested. At school I was very interested in history and geography. They were my two best subjects.
So did you have any kind of attitude towards the regime in Germany?
The regime in Germany, I didn't know much about it. Politically, I wasn't aware. But as the war came, you just figured that the war was here and it had to be done. But I wasn't particularly aware that Hitler should be destroyed, that sort of thing. No, I was a bit young for that.
When were you called up?
I was called up in October 1941, 28th of October 1941. But before that, I wanted to go to sea. I'd always been interested in travel. When I was very young, we went to Liverpool, New Brighton on holiday, and I saw ships in Liverpool, which fascinated me. And from then on, I'd always fancied going to sea. But to get to go to sea living in Bradford was very difficult. If I'd have lived in a port, I would have been a sailor. And when the war started then, I joined the Naval League Sea Cadets. And with them, I learnt to row on the local reservoir, just about a mile from where I live. I've seen it once since the war.
What were they called, the Naval...?
Naval League Sea Cadets.
What were they exactly?
It was it's still going as the Sea Cadets. It was just to give you an idea of what you would learn things, what you would do in the Navy. And it was run by all old retired sailors, and they had a boat on. They got a boat from the Navy, and they put it on one of the local reservoirs, and they taught you to row and things like that. They didn't teach sailing because they had no sails. But whenever you said we want to go rowing, there was always one of them would say yes. Never while I was in the Sea Cadets did any number of us say we wanted to go rowing, and not one of these men would oblige you, because they always said boat work was good for you if you was going in the Navy. And truthfully, it did prove good for me, because without what I learnt in the Sea Cadets, I would have never got through the boat journey when I was torpedoed.
How did you react then when you actually went into the Navy? Were you pleased about it, or dismayed, or what?
I was pleased. I wanted to go in the Navy. I wanted to go to sea. I didn't want to go in the Army, and I was pleased to go in the Navy. I'd read quite a lot about the Royal Navy, and I'd always admired their what they'd done, and that the men at the train could rise to the what they had to do at the time that they had to do, and I had a great admiration for the Royal Navy. And so consequently, when I went in the Navy, I thought I would go on Royal Naval ships. But when I went to HMS Glendower, the training place at North Wales, we were told you're going to be trained for merchant ships. If you don't want to go on merchant ships, there's other things that you can ask for. But we were told that if you don't ask to go on anything else, you'll be classed as a volunteer for merchant ships. And I fancied it. And if I'd have had to go again later on in my life, I would have gone back to being a gunner on a merchant ship. I enjoyed it. If you can enjoy that thing, I enjoyed it.
What was your training like on Glendower?
If you put it on television now, you would laugh at it. They taught you a lot of useless things. For example, they put great stress on testing the depth of the water with a lead line. Flags tied on a lead line. And that went out with the sailing ships. They taught us the parts of an anchor and all things like that. what we were going in for, it was no use to us. They give us very little time on boat work. They had a boat that was on wheels, but they didn't use it because the wind had blown the sail and it had tipped it over. Somebody broke his collarbone or his arm. It was a stupid thing. But they only took us rowing once. That'll be one of the reasons, I would think, why there'll be so many Dems ratings who were in the same position as me, who didn't have a clue what to do. When I was torpedoed, I'd done a lot of boat work with the Sea Cadets. And so, consequently, I had... I was confident when I was in that lifeboat. I said 6 days to land. I said I can last 6 days. It might sound big-headed, but that's what I said. And we did it in four.
We'll come on to that later in detail. But coming back to the initial training, there must have been a lot, though, that you were taught that was a great deal of use to you.
I can't recall it at present, but... They taught you the right of the ship, the starboard and the port. You see, I'd been in the Sea Cadets and I'd got a good grounding on this. And so, on the training, on the seamanship training, possibly I'm not the best one to speak to because I'd had a good grounding in the Sea Cadets. But looking at it now, the answer to that question is most probably yes, because most of the others... There was some went to the Navy there that had never ever seen a ship. I had seen a ship. I did know the right from the left. I did know the stern from the bow. But... looking back now, they taught you all sorts of things that they could teach you in the 6 weeks that you had. In the 6 weeks that you had, to teach you to move together, to be a team, and to give you the rudiments of seamanship. So, I suppose they did the best. They read you the articles of war, and they told you what you could expect to do, and taught you some knots. Well, the knots I'd already learnt, so I'm not the best, as I said, I'm not the best person to speak of that.
How did the recruits get on with each other?
Oh, everybody, fine. You got the odd bully boy, the odd boy who thought he was the wide boy, but somebody soon put him quiet, and the old sailors that were instructing you were all very old men. They put them, brought them down. They'd seen them all before. It was... Everybody was in the same boat, and in the same... Had to go away from home, first time away from home, and everybody just... got on with one another. There were no reason why you shouldn't.
Were they a real mixture, or were they from similar kind of backgrounds?
I would say they was from similar backgrounds, but some of them like to make you think they were a bit better than they were. There was well mixed from all over the country. There were Scotchmen there that I for one couldn't tell what they said, and there was Londoners who they didn't know what I said, and very little of what I said they would understand. But, they were from all over the country, a big mix. Big uns, fat uns, thin uns and long uns, and short uns like me.
And what was there? Was the discipline severe?
At the time you thought it was severe, but looking back, it wasn't no severer than it needed to be, or about what it should have to be in a training camp. They had to tell you that you had to do as you were told.
And did the recruits accept that?
Some of them were rebellious, but most seemed to fall in and go along with it.
Now, the first ship that you joined was SS Induna. Can you tell me about her?
Do you want to talk about the gunnery training first?
Tell me about that, yes.
Yes, the gunnery... You did 6 weeks seamanship training at HMS Glendower, and then you got... a weekend leave and you came home, and then you went back and you did your gunnery training. Well, I was sent to HMS Wellesley in Liverpool for that. The guns that you learnt were all old guns. In 1941 there was no modern guns available for merchant ships. It was, looking back at it now, it was a laugh on how you learnt it. You learnt with wooden shells, but then again you can't play with a gun with real shells. Put this wooden shell in, and then you put the cordite in and you rammed it home, and when the barrel got full, the fella who were the supply rating to bring the shells to the gun went round and caught it coming out the barrel. If you saw it on telly, it'd be hilarious. It were hilarious there, but there wasn't another way of doing it. They explained to you and taught you how to strip Marlins, Hotchkiss and Lewis guns, which were all First War. They made you feel that it was important what you was going to do, but you hadn't, your equipment was, putting it another way, your equipment was rather laughable, looking back at it, as to what you were expected of it, but that was all there was. You had 6 weeks of that, running round guns, you learnt to do every part of it, and by the end of the 6 weeks, you was reasonably proficient, and then you come to fire the gun. You went down to somewhere down the coast, and you got 5 rounds per man out of a Hotchkiss, Lewis and Marlin. You fired 5 rounds each, brump, and your 5 rounds had gone. And then you were supposed to fire the 4-inch. But the day we went down the coast, it was foggy. And so we didn't fire the 4-inch. Because we might have hit a ship coming into Liverpool. There were some ships coming in. And so all we got to fire was the machine guns, and then there's some other weird and wonderful weapon. It were a Holman projector, and on a ship that worked off steam, and it fired a hand grenade up into the air. I never saw one aboard a ship. I think they were withdrawn as more damage to the personnel of the enemy. But we learnt to fire them, and then that were it. You were ready for sea. You got 6 days leave and you were off to sea. So 12 weeks after joining the Navy, you were a fully-fledged gunner on going aboard a ship.
You were a DEMS gunner. Can you say, for the benefit of those who don't know what it is, what it means?
DEMS was defensively equipped merchant ships. You didn't get your rum ration. You had to be temperance. You got sixpence a day instead of your rum ration. But you was, as soon as you'd done your 12 weeks, you was a... acting able seaman, acting seaman gunner, and so you had got immediately a reasonable rank, and your pay went up a little bit. I can't remember now what the pay was, but as I didn't drink very little and I didn't smoke, I didn't do so bad on it. One thing that always sticks out in my mind was the day we got to HMS Glendower in Wales. We arrived at a railway junction called Afton Wen, and there was an old chief petty officer there to meet us, and he said, this was the first time I'd heard the saying. He said, "Are all you candidates for the Royal Navy?" And someone said, "I'm a conscript." He said, "When you stated preference on registry for national service, you said for service in the Royal Navy, and as such you are a volunteer. We don't have conscripts." And that quietened him. And then they took us on this little train, and it chugged along the line, and we got off at this barbed wire and encampment. It was a holiday camp, and you marched up this rough road and round and into the main gate. Well, it was my first encounter of marching. Well, of marching the Sea Cadets. I could march. The others were all over the place, like a gaggle of ducks, as they would say later on. And then when you marched over the quarter deck, they said, "March to attention." Well, that was the first do with that. Anyway, they got you there, they took your name, they gave you 10 shillings, which I thought were a good do. My spending money were only 7 and 6. I thought, "I'm going to stick this, Austin." And then they took you to have a medical, drop your pants to make sure you're a boy. That they did regular, on a regular basis in the Royal Navy. I could say more about that, but I better not.
Well, and then feel free.
No, to be quite honest with you, when I came out of the Navy, I thought I'd keep the life jacket and they'd keep that other part of me. They'd looked at it that damn much while I was in the Navy. I thought, "Well, that is not mine." And then they give you a lovely supper of liver and onions. And as I'd been travelling since 9 o'clock at morning with only a few sandwiches, I was really hungry. And then you got a blanket, and first introduction to bunks with, no sheets or anything, and no light bulb. And you slept till morning. Man, you were tired. And then in the morning they started your induction and your kitting out. I'll always remember that. They didn't even trust you to put your own hat on. You had to lean forward, and this old guy said, "Lean forward while I fit you for your hat." I've never been fitted for hats since. And he tried your hats on, and he said, "That fits you." And I always remember he said to some of them, "It will fit you when you've had your hair cut." And it did. I got some underpants. These should have been 2 pair of underpants. They came down to your knees, heavy woolen underpants. Well, every bit of day standards. I'd never had no underpants. This was 1939. I'd never had no underpants. And then they gave you all your kit. Well, I know how to put my uniform on. I've had a uniform in the Sea Cadets. And that were more or less your training. They taught you to march. One thing I always remember is Every Thursday you marched off at the double, and then every now and again they used to shout gas. Well, this Thursday, they, after divisions, they decided to have a gas and march off at the double. Well, the old chiefs, they couldn't trot, and I thought it were hilarious. You had to put your rifle down, put your gas mask on, shoulder arms, and then start running, and the band played I Don't Like to Be Beside the Seaside. It was good fun with that. But you went on through your training and that or that. One other thing, in Liverpool, it was totally different to the HMS Glendower. The man there, he encouraged you to be very smart. In Glendower, you had to be very, as you were, as the Navy said, as you were issued. And when you got to HMS Wellesley at Liverpool, the commander had greeted you, said, "Welcome to my ship. Your uniforms don't fit you so well, but we have two petty officers who'll take them in and make them fit you and put gussets in your trousers. You'll look like real sailors." I think that cost about 4 or 5 shillings. They did a good trade. Your tapes, he said, "Those tapes, I like long tapes. Why don't you get threepence from the slops and get yourself a yard of tape that hangs down like a real sailor?" We thought he were great, because at Glendower you were allowed no individuality. And then we did his training, and I'm a Catholic. One thing that I remember is, the last Sunday we were there, you fell in for divisions, and before divisions, the voice came over the tannoy, and it called the following ratings will fall in on the quarterdeck immediately. Oh, and my name was there, so you went down. Well, you had to, no option, you went, you know, they wanted you. Change into the rig of the day straight away. Miss cleaning up, forget what they call that, cleaning ship, and report back immediately. So you did do. And they fell you in, and they marched you across Liverpool. I thought, well, what's this? There's only two out of our mess, and different messes, and nothing in common, there's no common denominator. Well, eventually we got across Liverpool, about a mile and a half, to a place called HMS Mersey. We found out there that the Royal Navy had felled all the Catholics out, and as you were going to sea and some of you would be killed, in the wisdom they decided you'd all go to confession. And you went in this, you sat in this alleyway, and then all of a sudden the priest came. Some said, "I don't go to confession, I haven't been in years." The old chief said, "You're in the Royal Navy, you'll do as you're told, you'll go to confession." And the good, the bad, and the sinners all went to confession, then went to Mass and Communion, and got the breakfast. At least the Royal Navy saw that they were going to sea, as they should do. It's one thing that was said for them. But all in all, the training, some of the RN officers were a bit pompous, but I suppose they had to be. The captain in Glendower was a big aloof fella that stood and looked at you as if you were something. I don't know what he looked at you as, but it was just his way, I suppose. That's the training. I ended up top of the ratings at Gunnery, simply because they like you to shout, and having worked in the weaving for 5 years before I went, you learn to have a hard voice. We all have hard voices in Bradford from the mill, and I ended up with top marks simply because I could shout at Gundrill. I got a recommend to qualify for Gunlair after 3 months at sea, but as I lost my paybook when I got torpedoed, and then when I came back to Liverpool I asked about it, and I got no to do it, you know. So I never did qualify as a Gunlair, and I was happy where I was at the bottom.
Any other incidents or anecdotes that you can give that that happened to you whilst you were at Glendower or Wellesley?
No, not at this moment, most probably tomorrow I'll think of some better ones than this, but no, Liverpool, going from Glendower to Liverpool to do your gunnery training, we always thought would a boost, because at least it did get you into a port. You got the atmosphere of the coming and going of a busy port, and not being stuck out in the wilds of Wales. There were a couple of air raids while we were in Liverpool. The bombs came down. They came down very quick and very hard. I think we had 2 raids while we were there, and only ever been through the bombing of Bradford, which wasn't a major effort in the war. It did let you know that what the war was all about, particularly when you went up to Liverpool the next day into the centre of town, and you saw the dead on the town hall there. They used to list the dead up. You realised then that war went, were people getting killed. And when you went to the pier head and you looked out, which we did do, and you could see a wreck buoy between the Liverpool landing stage and Birkenhead. I did know the name of the ship, I forgot. You realise that it was what it was all about and what you was there for. But all in all, it was, the food were good. Food were good. Looking back, yes, it were good. You were nice and warm. I'll tell you one thing. Yes, I do remember. Silly little thing. But being an old hospital, HMS Wellesley, you had divisions in the street. And the commander got on his dais and the band, the marine band played the hymns. And one day we were having divisions and there was three young women stood across the road at the corner. Two of them had kiddies in their arms, as I always remember. And the Navy started singing the hymns. Well, they all used to say Roman Catholics and Presbyterians, other denominations fall out. Well, some days you fell out and went round the corner out the way, and other days you stood there and sang the hymns with the Protestants, as they were called them. Now we'd call them Anglicans, always the same. And you stood there, and I also remember this day that this commander, he had a big bandage round his head. He'd been injured somewhere, he'd something wrong with his ear. And all of a sudden he stopped the band, and he addressed these three ladies, would you like a hymn sheet? And they said yes. So he had the fellow who dished the hymn sheets out double across and give the ladies a hymn sheet. And then he started the proceedings all over again. And it were after that each morning that these three girls, young women, came out to watch the Navy at church. He automatically looked across and see if they had an hymn sheet. Nice human touch, I thought. That was typical the Royal Navy man. The RMVR would never have done that. They just wanted to look down and they give you a hard time. And then one day we were out there at divisions and they played the King, and there were three fellas stood smoking, leaning on the wall, and he stopped that proceeding and told them that they would stand up to attention while he played the King, or he would do something with them. I don't know what he was going to do with them, but they didn't argue, they stood up. Another thing that we had there, you'd to fall in on the morning to clean ship, and you either got a scrubbing job or a sweeping up job or going round picking matchsticks up. There'd more men than they really wanted to do with it. We found out that about four of us, if you got in one place, you got told off for PT before breakfast. Well, it were better going for a run up the street, changing into shorts and going for a run up the street than scrubbing a damn deck. That I can, what is it? So we used to do this on a regular basis, and this PTI instructor got used to us. And so he used to say, you're mine, right, get changed, shorts and vests, and you went out, did a few jerks and went for a run up the street, and every time you got back you were getting changed for breakfast, which we thought were a good deal. Anyway, this morning it was raining and they'd sent some more in, we were the regulars, we'd got used to that, and you had to go in this gun shed for PT. And you didn't strip down to your shorts, you just took your jumper and your jersey off. Anyway, he took his jumpers and the jersey off, and there's such a damn gasp. And I turned my head out at the front row of the second row, and he called everybody to attention, turned the back rows back to it, and what is it? And there was one guy there, I don't think he'd ever changed his vest since he got it issued 3 months before. God, I've never seen a vest like that. It was absolutely as black as your jumpers. That was one thing you'd to learn to do when you went in. You'd no idea. You'd to learn to wash your own vest. The underpants I didn't wear at that stage, but you'd to learn to wash your own vest and your socks and look after yourself. We didn't have an iron for us collar. White shirts we didn't wear because it was winter, you're in the dark shirts. But that one thing you'd to learn to do, and nobody ever gave you any advice about how to do it. And then when you came home after your 6 weeks for your leave, your mother looked at your vest and shuddered, and you thought you'd got them clean. Take that vest off. Well, that's pretty much what I can think about the training.
Now, can we go on to your first ship, and can you tell me what she was like to work and live on?
Well,
SS Induna?
Yes. As I said that, I came home on 6 days' leave. To the best of my memory, we came home on the Saturday. You left there the Saturday morning, Liverpool Saturday morning. You got home at Saturday dinner time, and you went back on the Friday. Now, I went back, and as far as I know, I'm pretty much certain it was Friday the 13th of February 1942. Not a good day to go back off leave for your first trip to sea. Now, I'm not superstitious, but then again, if the wife were here, she'd laugh, because I'm not superstitious, but there's a right lot of things that I don't do. and I don't think later in the war they ever got me to go back on Friday the 13th again. Anyway, I had to go back to Glasgow, so I got my dad took me down to the station. When you came home, you had two kit bags, a hammock and a case. They issued you, being a DEMS rating, with everything you could want. They issued you with tropical gear. They also issued you with long knitted underwear, which was knitted, machine knitted, but it was more like hand knitted. They were really thick, like a thick, they were practically as thick as, say, an Aran jumper. You had two pair of them. Them were really handy. I wore them later on. I got the train at Foster Square Station and went to Glasgow. I got out the train at Glasgow. It was my first time really away from home on my own, for the simple reason when you went down to Wellesley, there was, to Glendower, there was someone to meet you. But at Glasgow, you were completely on your own. And I saw a naval petty officer with a band round his arm, naval patrol. I said, where do I go? I have to go to St. Enoch's Hotel. So he gave me a hand with my kit. Went to St. Enoch's Hotel. He went up, I don't know what floor it was, sixth floor, we'll say. And then they took your chit and signed your, that you were on their books, and that you went to they took you to a transit barracks affair. I think before the war it had been a model lodging house. I'll always remember the steam pipes. They were just on piles of bricks about 2 foot wide, not even cemented together. And there were about six fellas in this room, and one of them said, get a bed over here, kid. And he said, oh, when do we fall in? Oh, you don't fall in here. I found out that these were two mine disposal lads. I'd never seen sailors like them before. Well, we had buttons on us, cuffs. They had zips. And to make their uniforms fit tight, they had zips in the side of them. They just seemed to be alone to themselves. And they went out on a night. They came and went when they want. And they just went to this petty officer and said, we're going wherever they were going. They told him. And it was simply so that they could find them whenever they wanted. And we had no idea. There were four of us, I think it was. And they said, oh, now, just put your kit there. Don't leave anything about us. It'll be stolen. We won't stay there, but there's people coming in on a night. When you go to bed, put your money in your belt and put your belt on your body. Well, when we woke up next morning, the place were full of sailors that were in transit. And then you knew what it was about. But we got settled and we were going down to have a supper. We put a cap on. And they said, oh, you don't put your cap on here, just go down in your jumper. Well, don't you have to put your silk on? No, your jumper, it's different here. We went down, and these two old chiefs and this fella in this galley, and he said, you want a pie? Oh, we were hungry. And we had this, I think in Scotland they call them mutton pies. Do you want another? Oh, yes, please. So we had another. So the chief said, get yourself off to...